Okay, this works. So first of all, I want to thank the organizers for organizing such an enjoyable meeting. So it's really been very nice. So this talk is based on two papers. The first one is in the abstract. So that's joint work with Anatoly Grinspan, Dmitry Kaliushny, Verbovetsky, and Viktor Vinnikov. And then a little bit more recently, I played around with some different Christoffel Daboul formulas. So we'll get to that. Von Neumann inequality is in the title, so let's start there. So I have an analytic bounded function on the polydisk, d variable polydisk, and I take a d-tuple of commuting contractions, strict contractions, and one can ask, is the norm of F applied to this d-tuple of strict contractions bounded above by the infinity norm of F? And von Neumann's result says, yes, it's true in one variable, and Ando did it for two variables, and then in three variables, the answer is no, and that goes back to the examples of Varopoulos and Kaiser and Crapp and Davy in the 70s. And so the polynomial they have is this one, which has infinity norm 1, and then I wrote down the three commuting contractions that Holbrook constructed. I guess the original one were 5 by 5, and I think they had 8 by 8, but these fit a bit better on the slide. So if you compute the norm of f of t1, t2, t3, that's 6 over 5, and that's bigger than 1. So that's that. So there are tons of questions one can ask now that something is not true. So how can you make it true? Well, you can say, well, maybe I don't want to consider, I'm just going to look at for which functions it is true. And Agler gave a complete answer to that question, realizations, model theory, and so on. Another tack you can take is say, well, I keep the class of functions the same. I just look at analytic bounded functions on the polydisk, and then I ask, well, for what d-tuples of commuting contractions is the inequality still true? So, of course, we can always take this infinity norm 1, so then we're in the sure class here. So that's okay. So in general, getting stuck in an airport is pretty frustrating. And but then once you calm down and you try to find something to do, then sometimes something useful comes out of that. So this little computation I did at Tel Aviv Airport. And so if you go back to these three matrices and you compute these expressions for these three matrices, then you see you don't get positive semi-definite matrices there. And initially you might have thought you would, because if everything commutes, then these expressions factor like this. And then if these two commute, you would get something positive semi-definite there, right? So that's what happens here. And I don't know how Varopoulos and how they pulled these operators out their head, if they were thinking of this inequality or not, or what they were thinking. But anyway. Oops. Oh, I never transfer that. So let's see. if I go back, no. If I go back and, oh, each time I need to do this, okay. And then I go forward. Okay. No, that was backwards. I'm sorry. Okay. So now you can say, well, so this would be, this is Agler's decomposition, right, which doesn't work for three variables or more. But now based on this, you can say, well, maybe there is some kind of decomposition where I should allow these kind of multiple, these products of these 1 minus zi wi. And of course, if you multiply this out and you do the hereditary calculus and then you plug in these t's, you get that, right? So that's kind of a guess. So let's see. I do want to move this. Okay. And now I'm going to switch gears and go to Christoffel Delboeuf formulas. So Greg Nacy, and I always butch up your last name, I'm sorry. But anyway, he pointed out how these expressions for the Schur functions, how they connect to Christoffel Delboeuf formulas. So if you have a polynomial stable, no roots on the closed disk, then this expression is a sum of Hermitian squares. And this reverse polynomial you get by just reversing the coefficients and barring them. And then once you have this Christoffel Delboeuf formula, then if you then make this rational inner function, and you divide this expression by P of Z, PW bar, then you get this expression. Okay, so this is your rational inner function. There should be a bar up there. And then here is this kernel representation. Okay, so that's the connection. So now we're going to do, okay. So I'm looking for some generalization in several variables of that. So here's the setup. So n is an n-tuple, then n underscore is this subset of d-tuples of natural numbers. And let's make these polynomials operator valued. That's not a big deal. The only thing you should do is you want to look at both p, p star, and p star p, but that's in general, it's not going to be the same thing. So the right setup is that you need a p and an r, and they should be the left and the right stable factorization of the same trigonometric polynomial. So if you don't care about Hilbert values and are happy with scalar values, then you just take P and R the same thing. Okay? But this is the right setup for this. So you have two of these operator valued polynomials. I take everything invertible on the closed polydisk, and then there is this equality. So if you do that, then you get the following expression, and this is not very deep. So you have PZ PW star R reverse RW reverse star, and that's equal to this expression. So this is not really a Christoffel Delboeuf formula yet, because you have this minus, there's a minus term, you wanted all pluses, right? But this is what you get initially. So what is all this notation? This thing is just the row vectors of monomials in Z, so up to degree n. And then this is L, this is the column with W bars, monomials and W bars. And these things are sure complements. So my notation is going to be that SI is a sure complement supported in the I by, in the rows and columns indexed by I of some matrix. And in this particular case, this is the matrix we're looking at. So what do? I have this, I take the inverse of this trigonometric polynomial PZ, PZ star, and that's a nice function on the detour, so I can compute its Fourier coefficients, and then I build this thing. I take inverses twice, so, I mean, there should be a way to get rid of that, but that's, let's not worry about that. It's, in this way, the formulas are kind of simple. Okay, let's just quickly review sure complements. So I have some positive semi-definite operator, and I have my favorite subspace, and then I, for convenience, I write this positive semi-definite operator with respect to this decomposition, and then this operator, which really lives on M, is called the sure complement of this operator supported on M. If two things happen, first of all, if I subtract this operator from that operator, I should remain positive semi-definite, and anything else of this form that I subtract from this operator and remain positive semi-definite should be smaller than the sure complement. And this is that the difference is positive semi-definite. Okay, and so that's the definition. And here are some nice properties. Well, first of all, it exists, so that's nice. And it's not hard, but actually you get mileage out of the existence of these sure complements. If you have two subspaces, one smaller than the other, then the sure complement on the smaller space, you can get it by taking the sure complement on the bigger space and take off it the sure complement on the smaller space. So there's this inheritance principle. And what really kind of made me aware how powerful this fairly simple notion is in this paper I did with Michael Dreitschel, where we show the operator valued Feyerese lemma just by using simple observations regarding sure complements. And that's Rosenblum's result. And with sure complements, it actually becomes very transparent and nice. So anyway, in that proof, so then you have a positive semi-definite trigonometric polynomial and you want to do an outer factorization. And the way to prove that whatever we construct is outer is done by this little lemma that says if my positive semi-definite operator is factored like this, like an upper times a lower, then the sure complement in this corner is equal to PP star if and only if the range of this Q star is in the closure of the range of R star. And of course, in outer functions is defined by this range condition, right, that the multiplication operator. So I always remember this lemma by writing down this, obviously if you want to write the identity operator as upper times the lower, the canonical thing is just to put identities both sides. But what if you do the shift? So if you then apply this little lemma here, so PP star is zero, which wouldn't be the Schur complement sitting in this corner. And the way that shows up is that this thing is not in the range of that thing, right? And it's sort of equivalent to saying that, I mean, if I take the constant function 1 and I want to do an outer factorization, it's obviously 1 times 1, but it wouldn't be z times z bar. That wouldn't be the outer factorization, right? So that's the connection. So I like this little lemma. Seems I'm always traveling. This was done on a train in England. So it's but there's times that you cannot access your, there's no computer or phone or anything, and you have to just entertain yourself. So let's see. And then here's another lemma that will be crucial in a moment. If I have some Schur complement and there's some off-diagonal zero, then there is an inclusion-exclusion principle going on. Namely, then this Schur complement I can compute as the Schur complement in this corner plus the Schur complement in this bottom corner minus the Schur complement just sitting in the middle there. So that's we're going to use that in a moment. Okay. So I left that one up here on purpose. So let's go back to this thing. So let's just look how that works out in one variable. So in one variable, this n underscore minus this corner n is just the number 0 through n with n thrown out, so it's just the number 0 through n minus 1. So this Schur complement looks like that. Okay? And then n underscore minus 0 is just 1 through n, and that Schur complement looks like that. I on purpose did the ij from 0 to n minus 1 here, and here I did ij from 1 to n, but of course these triplets only depends on the difference, so it's the same operator sitting here, it's just in a different spot in the thing. And so what I'm going to do, this is positive definite, so I can do a Kolesky factorization like that. So now I take this expression. So what does it look like in this case? There's this row column, and then there's this difference of Schur complements, this row, and here's a column. And then I look at this difference, or I look at this row vector, and I multiply it times this thing. So what is that? That's just 1 through z to the n minus 1 times this thing. And then if I hit this thing times that, that would be z through z to the n times this thing. But then I can take out a factor z, and it would be this thing, right? So anyway, so that's how you get the classical Christoffel de Boo formula, because you take this product here, and you get your polynomials, and then here you get... So anyway, so that's how it works. Okay. So now we go to two variables. Okay, so here is my set n underscore, so that would be this whole rectangle. But then when I throw out the point n, I get this rectangle with this corner cut out. Okay, so how can I write this set? I can write this set as the union of this rectangle here and that rectangle there. And of course these two rectangles overlap in this green rectangle. Okay. Okay. And now we're going to use our little inclusion-exclusion principle. Because we have this rectangle with this corner cut out, and for some reason we don't like rectangles, we like rectangles, but we don't like rectangles with corners cut out. And so we want to view that rectangle with the corner cut out as the union of two rectangles. So if we want to compute this Schur complement, and we have a zero, then we can use this inclusion-exclusion principle. And the nice thing is that there is a zero. Okay? And that's a non-trivial result. So Jeff and I did it for the scalar case in 2004, and then the in the operator case in the later paper. So anyway, so that thing has zeros. And so I can use this inclusion-exclusion principle. So this is one of those rectangles, that's the overlap. And then n underscore minus zero is like also a rectangle with a corner cut out. And by the same reasoning, it has this Schur complement that's also zeros in some crucial spots. And I can write it like this. Okay. And why do we like rectangles? Well, look here. This n1 underscore, you have n1 underscore here and you have n1 underscore there. So that stays the same. But then here you have n2 minus 1 underscore. So that's just 0 through n2 minus 1. And here you have 1 through n2. So this is just a shift. The bottom one is just a shift of that one. Okay, and the multiplication is by z2. Likewise, you have this shift here in z1 now, and here in this overlap, you have the shift in both z1 and z2. Okay, now then you take all this, you put it in that formula, and you factor all these Schur complements. You factor them, and then when you plug it all in, you get this expression here. So one minus, so this first term comes from this difference, this second term comes from that difference, and this third term comes from that difference. Now, of course, this is not good because we have a minus here. But that can be fixed because you can absorb this Schur complement in one of the others, because Schur complements on a smaller set are smaller than Schur complements on a bigger set. So actually, I should have absorbed this thing in one of these and this thing in one of those, and you can make that all work, and then you can get rid of this term here. So, but the polynomials will change, but that's not it. And that's, I mean, Greg was talking about this yesterday. The way you absorb these terms in here, that gives you some non-uniqueness in the description. Okay. So that's the two-variable case. Okay. And now for d variables, let me present it, and then I'll criticize the result, but anyway. So what happens here is really, so z is now d variables, but really what I'm going to do is I'm going just to focus on two of the variables, and the others will just be parameters. And so really what I'm going to look at, everything is operator valued, so I can just look at these things as multiplication operators. I can look at these things as just depending on z1 and z2, and then in the other variables, it's just some multiplication operator. And that's what I do. And if you do that, and it's not hard from the two-variable case to get this expression. Okay. So, for instance, in three variables, you would have like a 1 minus z3 w3 bar coming in. And then you see you get product of these two things, right? And here you get product of these two things. Okay, and you can say something about these S and Gs in terms of, in Z1 and Z2, they're polynomials. In the other variables, they're just analytic functions. Okay, so that's the result if you do this Christoffel de Boo formula. Now let me go back to the first paper. So this is the result from the first paper, and it's related to what I just showed you. If I have some sure function on the on the polydisk, and I pick my two favorite variables, then I can write I minus FZ FW star as the sum of two terms. Here are positive kernels, and what's in front of them is a product of D minus one of these expressions. Okay. So that's the main result in that paper, and it explains now the Feropoulos example, right? It gives an explanation why the Feropoulos example doesn't work, because then if you plug in the T's, you get something negative definite here. And but I mean, there's something unsatisfying about this formula, because what you would really like is some decomposition that first has like single factors here, and then some multiple factors. You want to kind of, what would be really neat if you had some formula where you have terms where these single factors show up, and then you have double factors, and then if the function is Schur-Angler, the double factors would disappear or something like that, right? But anyway, this is what we got. So as a result, if you have operators, and here I wrote it down for three variables, if you have commuting contractions for which this expression is positive semi-definite, then the von Neumann inequality holds. And so in D variables, you should just take one minus Z1 W1 bar times DDWD bar, oh no, D minus 1. So you take all sorts of products of length D minus 1, and you plug in your T, and you do your hereditary calculus, you plug in your T's, and if all of these things are positive semi-definite, then you get this inequality. You get the von Neumann inequality. Actually, only two of them, for your favorite two variables, only two of them have to be positive semi-definite. Okay. And then you get, if you're interested in the Navalny-Bick problem for sure functions, then this gives you some necessary conditions. We don't know yet if it's sufficient. But from these kernel representations, you get that if there is going to be a sure function that interpolates these points, then there must be a whole bunch of positive semi-definite matrices satisfying all these equalities. And that's it. Thank you very much.